Peace and blessings, everybody. You're listening to the Good Brother Experience, where it is I, the Good Brother, the original black man. I am Reek, and you are listening to part two, because I'm not going to keep y'all hostage and, you know, have you just sit here for just two straight hours just listening to an interview. Why not break that thing up? You understand? So thank you for the patience. Please tweet me, DM me, email me. Let me know what you think about this episode. I really feel those dogs in my bag. Let me know what you think. And here we go. Here's part two. That's your little sister, obviously, but 18-year difference is an 18-year difference. Yeah. So
Jackie and I had a really, really strange relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I look up and then she's a woman.
Right.
And she has you.
Her third year of college at this point.
Yeah, she's in, this is what was funny. Here it is. I go to college. I'm starving. Your mother goes to college. She gets off-campus housing.
Right.
She gets a stipend every week. I think they even thought about buying her a car.
Right.
And I'm saying, oh, look at this.
Would you take a look at this?
Exactly. Exactly. So I wasn't affected too much by that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, in retrospect, you think families are supposed to do better as years go by.
Correct.
Okay.
Now, 100%. And so, you know, as far as you and my mother's rapport, would you say it was strong? Would you say it was middling? Would you say it was weak?
I made the mistake one day. Only you know this.
Mm-hmm.
And now everybody else is going to know it. I was eating some cupcakes.
Right.
And I come in. And your mother's there. And your mother saw the condition I was in, and she literally cried. So I will always remember the effect I had on her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that made me try to change my life.
You know, that's your baby sister. This is literally the start of the 90s. 40. You were 40 years old this time.
Yeah.
You know, you have four decades under your belt as far as being a human being. And now baby sis is now a mom.
Yeah.
What is that like?
Well, I think that's one of the first times that she and I were able to have an adult conversation.
Right.
That's the first time. But I have to go back a few years too, back okay. in the 70s.
Okay.
Your mother is 8 years old, and I had, because what I would do is I'd pick her and your Aunt Mary up and, you know, keep them for about a month or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Aunt Mary is another sister of his, by the way.
Right. So we went to see this movie called, Alien.
Mm-hmm.
And this is literally what happened. We're sitting in the row looking at the movie. At some point in the movie, the alien creature starts to burst out of whatever they were,
mm-hmm.
The guy's chest.
Right.
Excuse me. At that point, your mother was sitting right next to me, and somehow or another, she did some kind of backflip and landed in the seat behind us.
I can believe it.
I have never seen an athletic move like that before in my. And she's 8 years old now.
Right.
So anyway, so.
Oh yeah, you know, RIP mom and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, with literally you having the opportunity to watch everybody grow up. What would you say is some similarities that me and my mother have?
Hmm.
You were around my mom when she was 32. You're around me when I'm 32. So you literally watched both of us become adults. As an adult yourself.
I think that one of the similarities is that you both have the same kind of intellect, which I really liked because I always thought you were a smart kid. That's why I would pick you up and you know, and bring you to the Bronx, to Queens, and you know, every place I went.
Right.
I remember at one time when I was Brokey Brown. I had no money. we're supposed to be going either to Manhattan or from Manhattan.
How old was I at this time?
Oh God, you must have been about maybe 4.
All right, so we're talking 94.
Yeah.
So chronologically, we're still staying in order,
right,
as far as the show is concerned.
So anyway, so I have literally
no money.
No money. But I do have a token. Right. Well, no, I had some money, but
right.
I put the token in. No. I said, Tariq, okay, just walk under the bar. Okay, because that would have saved me. I don't know how much money it cost at that time.
Right.
And you look at me and said, Uncle Leon, that's not right. We're supposed to pay.
And you're looking at me like, we? What job you got, brother man? Talk about some we.
But to make a long story longer.
Right.
I had to buy an extra token.
So me and my mother, as far as similarities are concerned, we both had very similar intellect, you're saying.
And not only that, but you had similar athletic ability.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But then you were a Peyton, so
right.
I really, you know, you really don't think about it.
Yeah, my mom got most athletic in high school. Like, this is like a big thing for real.
Well, you could have.
Right.
Because I don't know whether you remember.
No, when I was playing youth football, I remember.
You were the next Meredith. I mean, just some of the natural moves. I remember you taking a handoff, and you bounced from like the left hash mark, and did some kind of cross step and landed on the right hash mark down the field
for a
touchdown. And I said, "Oh my God."
Yeah, I was averaging like 2 touchdowns a game at that point.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But you know what it is with me in athletics is just no discipline. So those of you guys that listen to my show, you guys are aware of my cousin Ryan. My love of sports came from him. But, you know, very similar to you, I wasn't in the best situation financially where nutrition was a thing. You know, my housing situation wasn't the best, you know, so after grandma and grandpa passed away. So, you know, if there was no, and this isn't an excuse, this is just like the reality of the situation. Yeah. If there was somebody that was like, yo, Tariq, listen, we're going to wake up at 6 a.m, this is what you're going to do. You're going to eat this. You're going to do this. You know, you can jump out the gym. You're faster than everybody in the neighborhood. We're going to get you tapped into basketball and football. I'm going to give you some tools. But me, I was just doing it because I could and just to be out the house.
Right. Right.
But there was no actual. I didn't work on anything. I didn't work on skills. I wasn't doing drills. I wasn't learning how to go left. I didn't learn how to, you know, run routes and stuff like that. These are just things I was just doing. But, you know, but we're still in the 90s.
Yeah, but this is a thing, too. At that time, though, we all had conversations with your Uncle Meredith.
Mm-hmm.
And your Uncle Meredith wanted you to move up there so he could teach you.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm not. It just
and the beat goes on.
But the point I'm trying to make is that he wanted to help you,
right?
Okay, so
yeah, I'm sure.
I don't want you to think that there was nobody that was there.
It's all good.
That they wanted to, you know, pick up that mantle.
You know what it is? It's funny how perspective changes as you get older, because there's no substitute for having life experience, and you know. My aptitude for certain things is way higher than it was then. You know, my worldview is higher. My bandwidth is much wider than it was then.
Right.
You know, although I was always intelligent and well-spoken, I didn't have the life experience to know what life was really like.
Yeah.
You know, everything was happening to me in real time. You know, you really don't make a decision for yourself until you're 18. It's not because you don't have the opportunity to do so, but you know, you have truancy officers. Like, you have to report to school. Like, and school starts this time. This is first period. This is second period. This is fourth period. This is lunch. This is after school. So pretty much your life is pretty much, you're pretty much told what to do for 18 years.
But do you know why?
Yeah, to get you trained to then go into a corporation and then.
Well, not just that, but it teaches you structure in your life.
So that's twofold. One, it teaches you how to be an incredible employee. But then it teaches you certain things that they don't teach you about what the wonders is of going to school. Like being able to retain information and and apply it to something. Right. You know, everybody who's like, yo, tests are stupid. Maybe a social studies test is stupid, but reading information, remembering it, and applying it later on at a date at the drop of a dime is helpful.
But, okay, I have to stop you there. Mm-hmm. Because history is very important, only because if you don't study history, you're doomed to repeat it.
Right.
And that's too often, that's our mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, what do we need this for?
Right.
You know, I remember when I finished like advanced algebra.
Right.
And I can remember saying to myself, well, I'm never going to use this. And then I started selling cupcakes. And I was rolling the cupcakes out to different people.
Yes.
And I had to solve for X.
Yes.
You know, and I said, oh. So.
Yeah. I mean, school is very similar to, you know, Chipotle.
Okay. Where, I got to hear this one.
So, Chipotle isn't true Mexican cuisine.
Right.
But your palate is subjective to where you're from, how you was raised, what you're around, whatever have you.
Right.
So they need to create a generic recipe that they can franchise and give to the populace. And that's what school is. They had to come up with a generic curriculum to give people these steps in order to be a human being into the world.
Right.
So, you know, so yeah, it goes back and forth in regards to schooling and stuff like that. But, you know, with us being in the 90s, now you're in your 40s, you're catching momentum. You know, you give cupcakes a break. You're still the patriarch. you're still the patriarch of the family, whatever.
Right.
And now something is very unique. Outside of grandma and grandpa, you're the first sibling to get old. What is that like?
That's
and this is happening in the 90s.
Yeah. And the thing is that sometimes you're so oblivious to what's going on. You know, it's almost like the Peter principle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're involved in something and you don't know what the hell's going on.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So at that point, I'm not even realizing I'm getting older.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because it's funny, your cousin, Choo-Choo, Edwina.
Okay.
Some years ago, she sent me a picture of me, you know, when we were playing basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked at the age and I was 50.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
It's 2000.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the year 2000.
Yeah.
And not only are you aging, but I would say that, you know, when you're watching television,
mm-hmm.
and you're looking at what whoever was cast as the father. Okay, let's take Good Times, for example, right?
The what?
Good Times, the show.
Oh, Good Times, okay.
You know, that, what is his name? The father of Good Times.
Oh God. I got his picture. I can't.
Everybody has his picture in my head. Give me 1 second. I'm unlocking my phone. Good Times TV show, and I'm going somewhere with this, everybody, so just give me a second. We got the cast. 6 seasons. Okay. Didn't know that. John Amos.
John Amos, right. Yes. Who played football after all.
John Amos,
yeah,
was casted to be the father at the same age that you were in the 90s going into the 2000s. But what I will say is John Amos looked like he was 900 years old when he was 45, and you didn't. So I believe that you are one of the first generations of people that didn't look like they was 5,000 years old when they was 20.
You want to know why? Because I didn't have children.
Because, you know, just another example of this, right? You know, I'm on Twitter a lot. Mm. And they showed Otis Redding when he was on Soul Train.
Right.
He was 24 years old. This is before he died in the car, I mean, in the plane crash.
Right.
Otis Redding at 24 years old looked like he was 49 with five kids.
Yeah.
So you was just looking old back then.
Yeah.
You coming in, as the first wave of baby boomers, showed that, just because I'm 45 doesn't mean that I'm a trillion years old. Because the people that was casted to be the Golden Girls in the 80s, that Dominic, they were like in their 50s in that show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looking, and the show was based in the old folks' home. So just to put things in perspective.
Yeah.
So what was that like? Like, all right, cool. I'm getting older, but it's like, I still got some moves. I still got some Leon. Like, I'm not looking done out here.
This is the thing. I remember I was 24 or 26, between 24 and 26.
Mm.
And our band, we had a show at the, this was in Jersey City at the Boys and Girls Club.
Mm-hmm.
And Danny Nightingale, a guy that I grew up with, he was in the group and some other guys. And at the time, I had no hair on my face.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, we have this show, and we set up the instruments. We do the sound check and everything, the mic check and everything. And I said, well, why don't we go to the local bar and have a couple of drinks before the show starts.
What was your drink of choice at this time?
God, I have no idea.
Was it, were you, from my understanding, Johnny Walker Black was like a dominant beverage of the 70s.
Yeah, but I didn't drink it because your grandfather drank it.
Got it.
So it was no scotch.
No scotch.
No scotch.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I forgot what drink it was.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so we go in. And the owner of the bar comes out and says, there's about eight of us in the band.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you can't come in unless you show me some ID.
Right.
And I had left my ID at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the only one that didn't get a drink that night at that bar.
As a 25-year-old.
So what? I say that to say that we can't take credit for getting good genes.
Right.
In fact, your grandmother said it to us one day. She had a few, I think we were at the dinner table. And she says, your father and I left you and the kids with good genes.
Right.
Now, what you did with them was something totally different.
So
again, you can't take credit for the things that were passed down.
No, not necessarily taking credit, but like, because, you know, if you look at grandma and you look at grandpa, all the pictures that I've seen of them, they looked like adults. I don't care what time frame it was. They looked like adults
right. The
whole time. It wasn't like, oh, you look good. It was like, no, you look like a father of six. You look like a mother of six.
No, but this is the thing. I remember, I forgot how old mom was, but she had to be in her 30s.
Right.
And she had...
How old was she when she had you?
26.
Got it.
So we're all walking down the street, and I remember a woman coming up and saying, are these your sisters and brothers? So your grandmother didn't always look that way.
Okay, 100%. Just photos were unavailable, because by the time I saw grandma, I think my earliest version of seeing grandma was the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, when she was with like all the kids and everybody, and this was my little cousin, I mean my older cousins, Jamel, Rashada,
right.
Everybody's coming into play. I'm like, yo, grandma looks like an adult woman right here. Mm-hmm. So with you, what I was saying is, now you're leading the charge, because, you know, if I'm your younger siblings, I'm looking at you like, all right, however Liana's looking, I think I got a good shot. So you're the first person to enter a lot of things. You was the first person to enter marriage. You're the first person to go into the system. You're the first cupcake salesman. You're the first person that had to start his life over literally from scratch. Yeah. You're the first person that moved out the house. Now you're the first person to get old. And you're the first person to show, like, yo, just because I'm 50 doesn't necessarily mean I look like a 50-year-old.
Yeah.
So what is that like? Literally being, it's the year 2000. Y2K is a sham. We're not dying. We don't got to eat soup cans. You know, we don't got to live in bunkers. Things is going on. Uncle Leon's 50 in the world as a man with no kids. What is that like? Made into a new century.
It's having to deal with Gerard Felicia. You know, and I can't say anything really bad about her.
Right.
But what it is that as a black male. Now I know I'm gonna get a lot of letters from this.
Yeah, it's all good.
But I gotta say it anyway.
I'll filter through them.
And screw them if they can't take a joke. But you cannot have, as a black man in this society, I can't go out there and fight the world and come home and fight you too.
Right.
That's why I live by myself now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't do it.
You know, I'm starting to see a pattern. Well, not starting. I've always seen the pattern, but I'm just saying this for the sake of the show. As you were growing up, one of 11, two-bedroom house, you know, feeling congested, feeling hungry, feeling like you don't have space for your own. Like, all right, I'm never going to have kids. You tried marriage. Marriage didn't work out. Like, you know what? I'm not going down that path of being married to somebody again. Now, with Aunt Felicia, you concluded, I don't think I want to live with a woman anymore.
No, I don't want to live with the wrong one.
Okay, elaborate on that.
Right. I don't want...
Before you even say this, because you was tapped in with Aunt Felicia since the 70s.
Right.
What characteristics were you seeing that you concluded that she was the wrong woman? Because your relationship ended in what year? After 38 strong years.
Yeah.
What, 2011?
Yeah, about then. Yeah, about then. I really have to blame myself because I got involved in a lot of different things and she was there with me.
Right.
You know what I mean? But when you get involved in those things, you can't expect people to forget about some of the things you did to them. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it wasn't so much she was the wrong person. I was the wrong person trying to make things work.
Got it.
Okay, doing the wrong things.
Right.
Okay, but I, if I had my life to live all over again, because I'm the guy that when I was a kid, I rooted for the bad guys.
Right.
You know, which is terrible.
100%.
You know, because I look back now and I said, what were you thinking?
Yeah. Why do you think everybody loves the Joker? So good I'm right
point.
With you.
Good point.
Well, what was the thing that you concluded that is like, you know what? It's been real. It's been live. It's been real live. I got the trophy. I got the T-shirt. I think I'm ready to tackle 60 as a single man. What was the final straw for you?
Well, actually, I was more like 65, so it was more like the middle 60s.
Okay.
The fact.
Well, if it was 2011, you were 61 at that time in 2011.
Okay. No, I was 65. No, I was 61. You're right. You're right. What it was that I'm trying to think of what kind of life and what kind of quality of life do I want? And I knew that if I'm with a woman and I'm arguing every day, that my life is going to be cut short. But then at the same time, she had done so much for me that I became dependent on those things that she did.
Right.
She did my taxes. She did, you know, she balanced the budget. She did, you know, because of her, I was able to start saving money.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You know, she added so much quality to my life.
Right.
But at the same time, that yelling and screaming, I can't do that. And another thing that a lot of young guys will probably understand, the idea of, now, women control sex in this society.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, I'm not talking about rape or anything like that. But
right. I'm with you.
But at the same time, if you're a grown man and I need mine, and you're in control over it, and you use that, and you weaponize it,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to get it somewhere else.
Right.
Okay, so that's just the way it works.
I'm with you.
You know what I mean? I'm not one of those kinds of guys that sit back and just suffer in silence. No.
So, you know, I have a very unique question for you.
What is it?
You know, because we've been aligned for the entirety of my life. Me and you entered dating literally around the same time. Because, you know, I graduated high school 2008. I was in college. And, you know, in 2011, I'm 21 years old. And you haven't really seriously dated. I'm pretty sure in that 38-year span, you and Aunt Felicia have fallouts or whatever have you.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you're entering a new decade as a single man. And I'm entering a new decade as a single man. So what do you think was the difference for you as far as approaching a woman in the 70s and approaching a woman in the 2010s?
You have a choice. Either you're the victim in your story or you're the hero.
Mm-hmm.
Got tired of being the victim.
But I'm talking about socially, like, you know, the attitudes of women. You know, the way women speak, the aesthetics of women. Like, what were the differences in the 70s as opposed to the 2010s that you're like, you know, women wasn't like this 30 years ago.
Oh,
like,
No. But see, that's the thing. The average black woman had to be strong, especially after 1965 when they accepted the check instead of the husband.
Can you just elaborate that? I know you said this early in the episode, yeah, but yeah. Could you just elaborate on that just once more?
Well,
accepting the check as opposed to the husband, what does that mean?
Okay, a lot of pressure was brought to bear on the black family during that time. You know, and one thing, it's just like your great-grandmother. Because of slavery and Jim Crow, she wouldn't allow the males in the family to get an education. She wanted them to go to work and let the women go to college, okay, get higher. You know, because at that time, you know, black men were being lynched,
mm-hmm.
and you couldn't show that part of society that you were too intelligent.
And how old were you when great grandma died?
I think I was 17, I think.
Got it.
So I don't remember the question.
Well, we were speaking about women taking the check as opposed
to the
husband.
And that's what changed the whole black community, because before then, black women typically didn't have children out of wedlock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you did, you couldn't go to church and sit in the front row.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, at that time they were sending kids.
This is prior to 1965.
This was after 1965.
Okay, I just want to make sure the listeners don't get confused. So you're saying after 1965, what was going on now?
1965. That's when the script flipped. Okay, and then when women got the check.
What is this check?
That was the welfare check.
Okay. So welfare came into prominence in 1965.
Well,
around that time.
That's when in the black community it started to affect the black community.
Got it.
Because then,
because you were 15, you was right there.
Right. Because then at that time, 80% of black households had a mother and father. You know, in our community.
Right.
Okay. Now,
because of the prison industrial complex and welfare and everything like that.
Well, that was part of it, but then the other part of it was,
which literally came to prominence in the 70s, the prison industrial complex.
Absolutely,
and stuff.
Absolutely. So that was part of it. And
but the reason, the way we got here is because I was asking you the characteristics that you saw that changed from the 70s into the 2010s in like meeting women. And you were saying that women always had to be strong even back then because of 1965.
Right.
So you're saying that even dating in the 70s and dating in the 2010s, it was relatively the same because it was the same type of woman because of 1965?
It was the same kind of woman. Okay. Because this is the thing. A lot of women were not taught to be wives. They were taught to be strong and independent and educated. So now, a lot of black women, I don't want to blame this all on black
women. Of course, of course not.
But this was part of the change. A lot of black women opted for the education rather than the man.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Which wasn't the vibes beforehand.
Right, right. Because when I was a teenager, my mother didn't work, even though she had a college education.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So the most educated person in the house, right, got to stay in the house and cook.
So now when women started to look at their white bosses,
right,
and started to see how much money they were getting and stuff like that, and she would look over at the husband and say, how come you can't do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, and we went from 80% of black households being married in certain areas to 80% of babies born out of wedlock. So you can see that was that pendulum shift.
Right.
You know what I mean? So.
Because the thing that was being advertised, and I might be using advertising in the wrong sense, but the thing that was being pushed onto women, it went from, you know, have a man, you guys, it's teamwork. This is my roles. These are his roles.
Exactly.
To, yo, you can be strong. You don't need no man. You can do whatever you want to do.
Exactly.
Why would you have a man be on your neck? You don't got to cook if you don't have to.
Exactly.
You can go out in the world and make as much money as the men can. And mm-hmm. then, so this is the paradigm shift.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, those women are teaching their children.
Right.
Okay. And then this is the dirty little secret. They give rise to men that they would never date. Think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, a lot of, and the one thing that isn't being spoken about, and I'll give a story. We're gonna wrap up soon, but I want to give a story. I was working in Planet Brooklyn Academy from 2013 to 2016. I was in the heart of Brooklyn. I was on Atlantic Avenue, and you know, a lot of times what stores will do, I'm pretty sure they was doing this when you was coming up as well, is it will be two stores in one to save rent. So
yeah,
it was like,
yeah,
I got this half, you got this half, or I got this half,
right,
I'll give you a booth, whatever have you. And there was a lemonade stand in Planet Brooklyn called Twisted Lemonade, right? And I was speaking with the dude because it would be me and him because, you know, both of us were working for fledgling businesses.
Right.
I was working in clothing, he was working in lemonade. We have this storefront now to where he can tell his customers from him being on Steinway, whatever, in different corners of Queens, like, yo, I have a flagship store. Same thing for us. So because of this, there was a lot of downtime in the store because everybody didn't know about us yet. And I would speak to him, and it's killing me that I can't remember his name because I literally spoke to him every day. I want to say his name was James. Let's say his name is James because it's escaping me right now. Speaking to this guy, every single day we became real cool. You know, if he didn't have it, I'll get him food. He would get me food, whatever, right? I'll drink the lemonade every day. And he was saying to me, like, yo, do you know I could have had this very similar situation, this booth here, I could have had this on Wall Street. And I was like, really? He was like, yeah, but I didn't take it. I was like, why wouldn't you take it? Because there's more foot traffic on Wall Street with the cocaine addicts and everybody that's looking to stay up. You would have made a killing if you was anywhere on Wall Street, because it's rich white people with stocks and bonds or whatever. He was like, you know what they tried to do to me? This is my baby. Yes, my wife has been with me along the way. But, you know, the person that's been frontlining it, the person that's been spearheading this, the person that's been putting money into the marketing, into the promotion, you know, I had to develop contracting skills to learn how to make this booth from scratch. All this is me. You know, the LLC, all the posters and stuff, the store head, everything. And I go into the Wall Street, and it was a dude from Queens that had some of my lemonade, asked me for a meeting. I go in there. And, you know, we're having discussions. We were speaking about profit splits, and they was going to charge me rent, and they was looking to help me franchise or whatever. They just wanted a six-month situation to test amongst the customers, but it was only under one condition, that I had to say my wife was the CEO. And I was like, why is that? He was like, because what they don't teach you is, you know, there are certain incentives on both having minorities and having women at the forefront of things.
It's called the double minority.
So if the business looks like they're supporting a double minority, they're eligible for certain things financially. Exactly. And it's not only does it make them look better, but now they're eligible for certain things, certain grants, bonds, things Absolutely. Like that they can then recycle into the company. And he was like, yo, because of that, I couldn't do it. And it's not because I couldn't support my wife, but because if I'm going to go into a business opportunity, I want to go into a business opportunity properly. You're not going to literally remix how my business is to benefit you, and I'm just going to get crumbs in the process. And that is more prominent in the community than ever before, which is why I believe, I know there's more women CEOs than ever before. Not because they wasn't always capable, because women have always had the highest form of intellect. But the reason now is like white people found a way to monetize having black women or having women work for them, period.
Absolutely.
Specifically if they're black. So I'm right with you. So as all this is happening, you're still maneuvering your 60s. You're in new terrain now. You know, how did you stay above water? Because I don't think too many people could go into dating as a single man in their 60s. I don't think a lot of people have that skill set.
How do I say this without,
man, this is
coming
my show.
Off of being too full of myself?
Man, you're my uncle. You're supposed to be. That's why you have your own episode.
Okay. It's called skills.
Gotta have skills, man. With a Z. Gotta have skills.
You know, you have to be able to talk. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to find out who your target audience is. It's just like any business.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So, you know, as a basketball player, you know, when in doubt, everybody has their go-to move.
Right.
Sometimes you might have your fadeaway. Sometimes you might go into a spin move, in and out cross, a floater, a step back. What were some things like, you know what? Maybe I'm new to this. Maybe I'm in my 60s. But I do know that if I introduce this in the conversation, I can get some traction going. What was your go-to move when you was coming up? The joke. Relying on the sense of humor. The sense of humor takes you where you need to go.
Takes you anywhere. But it can't be just any joke. You have to be able to tell a joke so that some people will laugh and some people won't.
Right.
Some people will think
mm-hmm.
and some people don't.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So
the people that... So what you're saying is, with the type of sense of humor that I have, if I can get you to laugh with this line of humor, then I got you.
Absolutely. In fact, you tap me on the head and the drawers fall off.
You know, as we're coming to the close, you know, you bring up jokes. Can you please tell the audience an Uncle Leon official joke? They need to hear it. They got to get it. You call me with these all the time. You got to give them one.
I'll give them the one, the last one I told you.
Got it.
There's a guy that owns a hardware store.
Mm-hmm.
And in the hardware store, he sells all kinds of tools and equipment. So he had just received a box of Bastard Files.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Bastard File is the one that's most coarse. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so he just got a box and he put it on the shelf and said, I probably won't be selling these. You know, maybe I'll sell one every month or something like that. So, a guy comes in and he says, listen, I need a Bastard File. So the guy says, oh my God, I just got a box. Let me open it up. He says, okay, it'll be $15.90. Let me wrap it up for you and check you out. He says, okay. So about an hour later, another person comes in and says, listen, I need two Bastard Files. Guy says, wow, I didn't think I'd sell these many files, especially the Bastard Files, right? So this went on all day till he got near the bottom of the box. And finally a woman runs in and says, sir, I need a file. So he says, you want that bastard over there? And she said, no, I want that motherfucker over here.
And this, I want to say once every 2 weeks, I hear one of these jokes. And, you know, I know we've been going on for 2 hours now. What I have to say about, your most overt quality that I know about you is your malleability. I believe you're more malleable than anybody who I've ever met. I believe that your ability to adapt is unmatched. I believe your ability to look at the terrain and see where you can fit in is actually baffling to me because I've never seen anybody live this many lives. You know, a lot of times when you meet somebody after a certain age, they are who they are. Who you were at 50 is who you are at 60. But I will say that the way that you speak has been different. The way that you dress has been different. You know, your hobbies have differed. What you view as entertainment has differed. You do everything in your power to be up to date on colloquialisms and slang and culture, whatever have you. But it's not in a way to, like, be hip. It's just a way to be knowledgeable so nobody can speak in code when they're around you. We're sitting in your luxurious apartment. I believe this is the best apartment you've had in upwards of 15 years. As far as the decor is concerned, the couch is concerned, the paintings are concerned, everything looks tailor-made to what you want. And you just got here, what, like a year ago? Because I helped you move in.
6 months.
Six months ago. And to watch you be able to maneuver and go through literally everything a man can go through in this seventh decade is something that I'm going to carry with me, something I'm going to tell my children, something I'm going to tell my grandchildren. Like, you had an Uncle Leon, and there is no excuses for you to ever be a loser because this man came out as a one of 11. Nobody ever gave him anything. Nobody gave him a jump start. Nobody said, hey, here's a car. Hey, here's a loan. Hey, here's some clothes. Hey, here's some knowledge. And this man, outside of your brief intermission, I've never seen anybody speak to you disrespectfully. I've never seen anybody treat you with anything less than with the utmost respect. When I meet your friends, everybody has glowing things to say about you. You have the most rhythm I think I've seen. You put any kind of dance, you put any kind of music on, you can move to it. You're worldly. You know, me and you had conversations about paella. This is something that I can't do with everybody. We're both fans of olives. Gotta have the olives in the paella. You gotta have the olives. And I want to say it's been an honor for me to have you on my show, and it's been an honor for me to be your favorite nephew. Do you have any closing words to say to the people?
I do. This is for young people. First of all, what you do in your 20s shows up in your 60s. So be careful. That's number one. Number two is that I would have never made it to this point in my life without help. Okay, you have to be able to read the room and see what's going on and see how people think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you have to have a sense of who you are. Because if you don't have a sense of who you are, then you fall for whatever's out there.
Right.
Okay. So that's But always remember the people that got you from point A to point B.
100%.
If you do that, you're going to be successful. And listen.
Got to listen.
Just like your grandfather used to say, you have two ears and one mouth. Listen twice as much as you speak.
And one last thing. Now that you're 73, is there anything that you now have to put into your routine that you didn't have to do prior?
Yes, I need to exercise so that I can make it to be 83.
Right. Got to exercise.
That's the only thing I have to do.
And I want to congratulate you on your weight loss. It's showing that you've lost, what, 20 pounds? You had to have.
About 15 pounds.
I can see it's between 15 and 20. It shows in your clothing. It shows in your face and everything. I wanted to congratulate you on that.
I appreciate that.
And I'm out of here, guys. Peace and blessings. Pass the dressing. And I'll speak to y'all soon.